With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Say something funny for the opening.
But I tell you what, lads. You're pulling my finger, aren't you? Winding me up.
Bam, 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 bam. My name is Adam Boltwood. Joining me, as always, is the one and only David O'Brien.
Yes, I got the one and only this week. Is a great start to the podcast.
And as always, we've also got Lawrence McKenna here.
Got a lot to talk about. Let's get down to it.
Lots to talk about. I want to start off
by
talking about... we're talking about Pep Guardiola. We're talking about the Champions League, Europa League draw. We're talking about it all. And we've got a special guest this week, Rory Jennings from the Chelsea Fans Channel. Later on, he's going to be joining us to talk about Chelsea and their current problems. But first off, Lawrence, I'm going to come to you first. Mm-hmm. Pep Guardiola is reportedly decided to leave Bayern Munich at the end of the season. Now, this hasn't been confirmed by the club or by himself. He's apparently going to come out next week and clarify his future. But the reports coming out of Spain, specifically in Marca, were that he has made the decision. He's decided it's run its course at Bayern Munich. What do you make of that decision?
He's achieved quite a lot in his time there, but changing parts of the culture, changing in terms of the Spanish influence, or what some people call a more Latin American influence, the likes of Vidal in there. And then also, obviously, Xabi Alonso, Xavi Martinez, and moving a little bit more towards a Barcelona-esque model, even though, you know, still keeping the Bayern Munich roots, essentially. And I think overall, Bayern Munich are going to be very happy with the time they've had him there. What I'm going to say is I don't know if it's really... I don't know how Bayern Munich are going to pick up from that, almost. How are they going to progress from there?
Well, Carlo Ancelotti is apparently the man they've earmarked to take over from Pep Guardiola. I mean, they seem very different managers, Dave, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. But I think what Ancelotti does very well is when he follows a manager that does keep such discipline, that's the type of job you want. You know, post-Mourinho, Ancelotti is your best man. So kind of like with Guardiola, where it's very sort of anal in a way of how he wants his sides to play football, the style of play. There's so many things that you've got to be thinking about. Having someone like Ancelotti that sort of gives the players the power back, sort of empowers his players to make the decisions. So it's probably the perfect thing for Bayern Munich post Guardiola. My question is, though, in terms of how he's built this squad now, you're seeing this real Latin influence. It's weird that he's potentially will be leaving at the end this season when it's finally becoming a Guardiola squad with players that can play this style of football. It seems a little bit strange for me.
Do you think if he feels a little bit like he will win? I mean, it looks very clear that they've got the best chance for the league this season. They certainly have a Champions League, pretty much. They're going to go to the quarters if they do well on this run. And then, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, I get, was remit was, do you think, when he came in at Bayern, not to, you know, have a dynasty, but to sort of go in, lay some foundations? And I think there was always this question over whether he was a true Bayern man. I think some people kind of questioned whether it was a relationship more of convenience than a relationship of passion between the two of them. And, you know, I imagine that there's more to it. You know, Raphael Honigstein has written about the man extensively, and a lot of people have written about Pep. And what I'm interested in is where he wants to go next and what he wants to do next, because arguably the next club that he goes to is not going to have the same basis that he's had before.
It's interesting that one of the theories floating around about Guardiola is that obviously the clubs he's being linked with now are mainly Premier League clubs. We're talking about Manchester United and Manchester City, most significantly. I've heard talk that essentially, Guardiola sees Manchester City as a very exciting project for obvious reasons, but also Manchester United, because it's a chance to almost prove himself. It's not a club where all the pieces are in place where there are already world-class players there. I mean, you know, when he obviously joined Bayern Munich, they'd just come off the back of the treble, was it? You know, but Barcelona, one of the greatest teams in a generation, all coming through together at that club. What do you make of that, Dave, that maybe Manchester United are not quite at that level, and he sees it as a chance to prove, okay, I can go into a club, make it in my own image from top to bottom, bring a team up from not the very zenith of the game. What do you make of that?
It'll be interesting. It'll be a longer than a 3-year project at Manchester United, I can tell you that. It's an absolute mess at the moment. Where's the club going? There's loads of questions. The style of play that we've got under LVG just doesn't look like the players can replicate what he wants on the pitch, and not taking their chances and so forth. But, you know, I'm a big fan of Guardiola, and I've done a lot of reading into him, and what he sort of has mentioned in his two books that I've read is that he likes clubs with tradition, and that I just hope as a United fan that that's why he'll go to Man United. You know, he's always spoken to Fergie about managing the club and so forth after Ferguson left, so I just hope that he sticks with that. But for me, the project at Man City is the right one for him. You know,
really?
The players are training.
Dave, come on. Adam, when are you going to go
and training
see
they're training the way that Guardiola wants players to play football in terms of, you know, your Rondons at a youth level is the key focus.
Things seem set up in a way. Not only, as you say, that youth level that's there, but also there's been a lot of talk about the directors who are in there. I think, is it Ferran Soriano? And is it, how do you pronounce his name? Is that T-X-I-K-I? Cheeky Bergenstein? Is it Cheeky?
Bergenstein.
Shaking. Yeah, but bringing those guys in, he obviously worked with Barcelona. The pieces are very much in place for Guardiola to go there.
I don't know if I 100% agree. I don't know if I 100% agree.
I think it's just there. You know, the likes of David Silva, obviously a very Guardiola-esque player. Guardiola wanted De Bruyne at Bayern Munich as well last season. It just feels like it's kind of coming the right for Man City right now. It's like the right way. You know, Yaya Toure probably will be moved on, would you say? You know, he's not had the best of seasons.
So do you think it's actually the better choice for Guardiola with Manchester City? You think, Dave?
What do you think?
Well, I think he's obviously courting a lot of top offers, and he's one of those managers where you, at the moment, you'd imagine that whatever he chooses to go with is going to be the right option. You'd hope for him, at least in his career and the club that he goes to. But what I would say about it is that every club that he's gone to in the past, Louis van Gaal's been there a few years before. And obviously they both come from the Barcelona camp, whereas Man City, whilst they're looking maybe to ape or mimic some of what Barcelona are doing, aren't taking the same Barcelona approach. And I just wonder if therefore Manchester United is a better way to go, or maybe an Arsenal is the way to go. I think there's more to it, and I think we're very high on Man City at times.
What about, let me throw a left field one out there, what about Arsenal or Chelsea is another one I've seen mentioned, obviously less likely.
They did say London was preferable for him.
Yeah, that's what they're saying for him and his family. Perhaps London would be more suited to him. Arsene Wenger maybe going out on a high this season, lifting that Premier League trophy. Guardiola comes in. I mean, Dave, can you see that happening?
I think that, again, in terms of the current squad, which Premier League sub fits Guardiola? Obviously, I think City because of the youth and so forth. But current squad, Arsenal is the correct, you know, Arsenal squad is the squad that you've got. That you've got like brilliant ball players in there: Santi Cazorla, you know, young Coquelin, you know, Ramsey, Sanchez. It sort of fits quite right with Guardiola, some of these players. But I just can't see it at Arsenal. I think Wenger's going to be there for another two seasons. He deserves to be there for another two seasons. He deserves to have, you know, two more big signings and then see if he can go and win the Champions League, go and see if he can win the Premier League.
I do think the English culture is going to be an interesting challenge for Guardiola because, you know, obviously Germany and Spain are very different cultures. There's Germanic, there's the, you know, the other influences that Spain have got. But then there's also the idea that they were two big institutions who were somewhat exceptional. And I don't feel like Man City is such an exceptional place apart from what they've essentially cultivated in a very short space of time.
Interesting. Let me throw one more at you. You're talking about a team of cultivated a team in a short amount of time. What about Chelsea? Now Mourinho, he may well be in the job until the end of the season, Mourinho. But you know, he may well be gone in the summer. Roman Abramovich is a known admirer of Pep Guardiola. He tried to lure Guardiola to Stamford Bridge before he ended up choosing Bayern Munich back in 2013. He sort of, you know, made all the overtures. I think Raphael Honigstein himself sort of said Abramovich was trying to put the pieces in place in terms of players and infrastructure to attract Guardiola. It didn't work out, obviously, and Mourinho inherited that team. But maybe he could try and lure Guardiola next time.
Again, it's quite a good fit. I think that the playing style, similar to the Arsenal thing, is quite a good fit. You know, the likes of Pedro in there, Eden Hazard. I think they just need to work on, obviously, their centre-halves and that type of thing. They need to have to move them on and get some real ball players in there. I think at central midfield as well. You know, looking at likes of Matic would probably fit quite nicely. Fabregas has played with Guardiola before and they've had their, not differences, but they've sort of, it's been mentioned that Fabregas can't stick with the tactical plan. He's quite a player that sort of desires freedom and tries to get out the tactical shape and so forth. But the interesting thing, I was actually watching Chelsea under-19s last week. I know, very, very niche, 3 o'clock in the middle of the day in the UEFA Youth
Is there any football you don't watch, Dave?
Potentially. I don't really watch enough in England. I think I need to watch more like championship games because I lack knowledge in those. But going back to this this sort of youth side, they're playing with playing a 3-4-2-1, a very continental system, and they were getting the ball down. They were playing with it. And if Abramovich has sort of pushed this through in the club where they want to play, they do play 4-3-3 throughout the whole youth setting of Chelsea. So if it is going the right way in terms of getting Guardiola in there, they're kind of doing the right things similar to Man City in a way where they are developing their youth to play this certain style maybe.
I feel like Mourinho also comes from a similar background though. I mean, you know, he's always like 4-3-3, you know, he's adapted it, but I still feel like there's a lot of Barcelona in both of them. It's just that maybe Mourinho is a different kind of Barcelona.
I think it's going to be fascinating.
I mean, it is, though. It's true, though, isn't it? He's somewhat of an outsider, whereas Pep is always the man at the centre of it all, but in a different way.
It's fascinating how he is almost... he's like almost like the only manager now. Do you know what I mean? Like all these clubs we're talking about, these top clubs, Pep Guardiola is the option now. Jürgen Klopp's gone to Liverpool, obviously. He was probably the only manager below that. Carlo Ancelotti... potentially, but Pep Guardiola is just that manager that every single club would love to have take over, it feels like.
I don't know if every club would like. I mean, I'm not sure how much I'd like Pep at Liverpool or how much I'd like him because I feel like he'll go with certain clubs. I don't know if he'll go with every club. I think that's what I worry about a little bit with Manchester United is that, are they looking for the next Sir Alex? Whereas actually, you know, was there a lot of good things? Were there a lot of good things that they should continuing?
Another thing that needs to be sort of switched on a little bit with United fans, we've seen the social media really blow up lately. And I think the blame's been shoved down LVG's throat, but you've got to look elsewhere. And I feel that with Guardiola coming in, yes, it will be a completely different style of play to Ferguson, but it will be a very, very, very good style of play. Like when Guardiola gets his teams playing how he wants them, getting men in between the lines, attacking, you know, you see some of these Bayern Munich performances we've seen over the last, you know, 2 years, the 5-0s, the 7-1s in the Champions League have just been phenomenal, like real phenomenal football. I think it's very much different to the Alex Ferguson, you sort of hold it in midfield and get it wide and have your wingers attack. It's a different style to that. And I think the United fans as a whole, whichever way we go, we've got to be a little bit more open to different styles of play. Mm.
Finally, Guardiola, just to bring it back round, Lawrence, do you think it's the right time for him to leave Bayern Munich? And do you think obviously a lot depends on what happens this season and specifically what happens in the Champions League. But how do you think he's going to be viewed once he does? Yeah. What's his legacy going to be at the club?
Well, his legacy is a mixture of culture with what was already there. I think an appreciation of that from the board level and how they've always backed him to do that. You know, obviously moving closer to the sponsors that he's really close with, Adidas and those kind of guys, I think it's probably been really beneficial for his overall image publicly. I think obviously he's managed two of the best clubs and most, you know, the clubs at their zenith essentially in Europe. And then not only that, but he kind of has this reputation of building clubs up and then other managers take over and they do well. So I think, you know, there's that kind of inertia idea for other clubs when manager leaves, whereas actually it's a case of momentum with Pep when he leaves. So, you know, there's that. I also think when you have two things that are at peak of their powers, it's not necessarily the worst when the two come apart, and it doesn't have to be, you know,
Because as I said earlier, you know, when he came in, Bayern Munich wanted to install Pep Guardiola before Jupp Heynckes left, and it was all a bit controversial. It was all a bit confusing because Jupp Heynckes was sort of making these statements that, you know, he was supposed to be leaving, but it was kind of like, you know, he was insinuating that he felt a little bit put out that Guardiola had been hired while he was still manager at the club. Heynckes goes on to win the treble. Guardiola obviously comes in, the most highly rated manager in the world, as he still is. Mm. But those failures in the Champions League and the way they were beaten in the Champions League has somewhat, it certainly hasn't tarnished his reputation, but it has been somewhat of a blemish on his time in Germany, because people perceive the Bundesliga to be almost a walkover for a team as powerful as Bayern Munich.
Interesting. I think there's a lot of politics. Like I said, there's politics and there was resistance at the club somewhat. And that's the resistance that we find.
So in the Champions League, Dave, Bayern have been drawn against Juventus. You'd say it's a favourable draw for Bayern. You'd put your money on them to go through. It's not going to be a walkover by any means. But who would you favour in that tie?
It's going to be a really interesting game. Juventus have started to hit a bit of form. Dybala's finally playing like he sort of did at Palermo in the first half of last season. They've switched to a 3-5-2. It'll be really interesting, but I really do think Bayern are just going to absolutely blow them away. I feel like it might be tight in the first leg, you know, away in Turin, but I think Bayern have got too much firepower to sort of deal with Juventus. You know, the Juventus machine is getting a little bit older in some of the parts. The likes of Pirlo have gone on, and they are beatable. It depends what Paul Pogba's going to turn up. You know, if a Pogba that fancies it turns up, bangs in a goal from 20 yards, you can see Juventus sitting on the counter-attack like they did against Man City, playing away. But I just think this Bayern team, it's got so much depth. With Robin back, with Lewandowski absolutely banging goals in. Yeah. Thiago should be back as well by that time. I think Thiago's a really key component to this Bayern Munich team in Europe. You know, holds the ball very well, retains possession, creates chances. So I think if he can get him fit with the likes of Lewandowski and Robin, they're very dangerous side.
Before we come on to the English teams, then, let's just quickly run through the other fixtures in the Champions League. We've got Roma, Real Madrid, Lawrence. Do you probably favour Real Madrid for that one, surely?
I favour Real Madrid. I think there have been rumours today that one more slip up and Rafa's gone. I think that's ridiculous, but it is what it is. So, stupid. The way they're treating him, I think, is awful. And, you know, I think it's a complete lack of respect for a manager who is, frankly, I think, probably better than the job that Real Madrid offer him.
Wow. Okay.
I think Real Madrid are a bad club.
I was surprised he took the job, to be honest. I was very surprised Rafa Benitez took that.
I wasn't. He's a Madridista. I think he really loves. He loves the idea of going back. And I think
Maybe there is that emotional tie, which maybe overruled the logical thought, which is it's a poison chalice and almost impossible club to manage. But you'd favour them to get through to the next round, certainly.
You'd hope so. Things seem to be a little bit smoother there.
Dave, talk to me about Ghent and Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg have obviously knocked out Manchester United, essentially.
These two teams have never met in the Champions League. Ghent through to the quarterfinals, the last 16 for the first time in their history. Wolfsburg are going to be an unknown package. You'd definitely favour them in this tie. You know, the likes of Julian Draxler and Max Kruse are starting to really combine up front well with Andre Schürrle off the left. It's looking good for Wolfsburg for me. I feel they're going to be a quantity that one of the big boys might struggle against in a way. They'll get through this round and then it'll be the next
surprise
one.
So package. What about Benfica Zenit, Dave?
Again, I'd say Zenit are my other surprise package in this Champions League. They've just been very solid away, you know, very solid at home. They had a pretty toughish group for them in a way with the Lyon in there, but Lyon have struggled this year. And Valencia, was it? Yeah. I reckon it's going to be a walk in the park. You've got Hulk, who is in absolutely banging form. And then Zubar up front, who's been directly involved in 9 goals in the Champions League this season. Only Ronaldo has been involved in more goals. So they've got some real threat this season, Zenit. And going away in Russia, cold in February. Very difficult to play.
Always
and that's
cold.
It's a big thing. We always laugh about it. But if we looked at the Ukrainian-Russian teams in the Champions League or in the Europa League more, going to have some good records for the home games.
The other fixture, before we get to English teams, the final one, is PSV versus Atletico de Madrid. What do you think
of
that?
Not sure you've said those words right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I said it in like a weird Dutch-Spanish accent. I just went mental.
I thought when I first came here.
Yeah, in the Champions League. Lawrence, your thoughts on that one?
I mean, tasty because of the way that both clubs sit. I think Atletico Madrid are somewhat of a slept-on team. after the huge rise to power that we saw, and you know how aggressively they challenged Barcelona and Real Madrid. I think now, again, after what most people are saying is another summer sale, they're bringing through more players, and we're seeing the benefits of having a manager like Simeone, who's able to, you know, see our players slot together, but also making other players peak at the right time. I think that's very often something that's overlooked, especially when we look at the modern day teams, which are built as a machine, how he's changed parts in and out and managed to change things around and mentally prepare the players in the right way. The worry again is that, you know, Atletico over the course of a tournament, are they going to have enough? And that, I think that's part of it. And, you know, I don't think they will, but I think they'll come past PSV.
Let's go on to the English fixtures then. The toughest draw possible for Arsenal, Dave. Barcelona, the one team they wanted to avoid.
Everyone's so happy.
They've got them again. Like, brilliant. Apparently the Barcelona players were... Now, this is just a report, of course, but apparently the Barcelona players were cheering when they heard this. They're on a plane at the time, and they cheered. Apparently,
We don't know why they cheered. Maybe they cheered because they wanted a tricky time.
Yes, of course. but Dave, I mean, the talk... straight after the draw was that, you know, we were doing the draw live, weren't we, on the Football Republic, and all the talk was Arsenal basically out. It was almost like a foregone conclusion.
This is Barcelona team is phenomenal, but you know, you see at the weekend, Deportivo La Coruña came from two goals down to get a draw with Barcelona, so they are beatable, but I can't see it at all. I think this Arsenal team, it's getting there. It's getting to become a sort of world force with the signings at Zeal, Sanchez. They just need to keep continuing in that vein, and I think they'll be all right. I just think there's too much in this side. Messi, Neymar and Suarez, unbelievable. Iniesta, back to his peak. Busquets. Piqué's looking like he's playing a man possessed. He looks really aggressive and angry again. So I just can't see it.
January's obviously coming up. I mean, there's talk of Wenger's going to make a few signings, maybe that midfield signing finally, to sort of replace Coquelin, who's obviously injured. They're on good form, Arsenal. They're looking good, as they always do in this period. But I mean, Lawrence, would you give them any sort of chance at all?
Absolutely. I don't think Barcelona are necessarily the unbeatable side. I mean, we saw them draw at the weekend. We saw why they drew. We saw that. We also saw that obviously they were not having the best day at the office there. And on the weekend, they did manage to, you know, miss a lot of chances. But it's also about disrupting what Barcelona are trying to put together. And I think Arsenal have shown in the past they have the ability to disrupt other teams in their flow and essentially bring their own game through. There's a reason that they beat Bayern Munich, and there's a reason that Barcelona have drawn against certain people. And all you need is a win and a draw. It's not about, you know, you can also have a win and a loss, bear in mind. Mm. So if it plays into one team's hands more than another, then, you know, there's no reason why Arsenal can't get past them. Look at what they did to the likes of Munich.
The first leg is at home.
Maybe that's the issue.
Yes. But if you keep that tight, you can always go away and nick a goal. You can always nick a goal.
I don't think that's impossible. I mean, I see this sort of being, it's one of those things where if a goal goes in early, the commentary almost sounds resigned. It sort of goes 1-0 and it's like, oh, and they're away. And suddenly
a few years ago when they actually beat them at home. Arshavin scoring, I think we were going back a little bit, but it can be done. But you just never know.
There's going to be players returning from injury. Yes. They've got all sorts of talented people.
Maybe you've not sold it for me.
Sorry, lads, sold it for me. I'm going to go down the bookies and put a tenner on it. Arsenal to win. Sorry, buy
Oh, Dave, you're really careful with the bookies. You know, if you're just throwing money around like that, Dave, that's unhealthy.
What about
Arsenal to win? Oh shit, not this again. Fine, 20 quid on Barcelona to lose. Oh shit.
Oh no.
How about Paris? Paris Saint Germain.
Yeah, you're really good with names tonight.
Yeah, I did that one on purpose. Paris Saint-Germain, Dave, against Chelsea.
Oh, yeah.
Another difficult draw. Things could turn around for Mourinho and Chelsea before February. We don't know. But who's your money on at this moment? Bear in mind, we are 2 months away from this game.
Well, right now, if they play tomorrow, it's definitely going to be PSG, right? You know, Leicester City took them apart on Monday. I think PSG are in form. They just smashed Lyon 5-1. Zlatan looks like he fancies it. Di Maria again.
Are they Are they 18 points clear at the top of the French league?
Something
16?
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy like that. It's nuts. You know, I thought Lyon would be fighting for the league again, but it just seems like PSG have taken it to the next level. You'd say that Lyon have lost a number of sort of players, and Titi's been out, and they lost a...
But Dave, there's going to be a lot of people who don't watch PSG right now, and you know, don't necessarily know a lot about them. They know a lot about the big names. What style of football would you say is that PSG play?
If I'm going to be honest, I'd say it was quite boring.
Yeah, like, that's my problem.
A lot. Like they just keep they have possession for possession's sake. They're not very quick. The tempos, again, going back to, I've said it probably a year ago or so, that they're quite Italian. They feel quite Italian to me. They feel like an Italian team playing in Ligue 1, where they're quite slow with their build-up. They'll wait and then they'll kill you. They'll kill you in an instant and then they'll go back to just playing sort of chilled out football in a way, you know, playing the ball around the back, and then they'll maybe attack a bit more, and then they'll... It's not quite my favourite style, I'd say, but it's doing a good job, right? And Chelsea are struggling at the moment, but this could be the perfect tie for them, you know, playing on the break, playing on the counter-attack. If they can get some of these big boys back to scoring goals, or Mourinho does get sacked, then they'll have a half-decent chance.
What they basically do is they play cautious football, but with mercurial players.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird to watch, because there's something that's... For me, there's almost nothing scintillating about it, because you're sort of like... Okay, we'll see a great moment. And it almost becomes a bit like watching like the Harlem Globetrotters or something.
Yeah.
Because it's a bit like, oh, they'll do something good in a minute. And it almost feels a bit assumed. And I don't know, that's why I'd rather see Chelsea go through here.
Interesting.
And well, I you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
Of course not. What about Dynamo Kiev versus Manchester City? Manchester City fans were very happy with this one. Dave.
They were, yeah. It's interesting. Kiev have got their... in the home leg, Kiev are allowed to have no fans at the ground for incidents of racism against Chelsea. So that's going to be a massive factor taken away. You know, very intimidating to go to play away at Dynamo Kiev. So City should win this. This is where City could finally kick on and become a European superpower properly, in a way where they've sort of done it. They've flirted around with the idea. They keep coming second in the group. Now they came top of the group thanks to Sevilla. Obviously, a massive result there in Sevilla to put them into the Europa League. But last season in the Champions League, Manchester City had the highest average age for their squad in the last 16, I think. So that's quite a positive thing, in a way where you do see teams, it could just correlate with their age. The older teams get the more experience. We saw that AC Milan team last for years and years in Europe, fighting out you know, for the two finals in a row, obviously won one, lost one. So it's really time for the likes of Yaya Toure, who's getting towards the end of his career. Vincent Kompany, if they can get him fit, that is so, so crucial for the City side. We've seen that Otamendi and Mangala look like headless chickens when they don't play with Yaya. Not Yaya, sorry. They don't play with Vincent Kompany. So it's key to get him back. Key to get Aguero back, and they've got the potential.
Interesting, very interesting. Now we move on to the real competition, guys. The real deal.
Yeah.
The Europa League. All of our teams are still in that one. Luckily enough.
Although there's a reason that a lot of our teams are still in that one. And then there's a reason that some of our teams probably won't get into it if the teams don't do well.
Yes, there is.
Although everyone's going on about the Italian coefficient. Not enough people know about it. There's actually really good Gab Marcotti articles about maybe the unlikelihood of England dropping out in 2017-18.
I actually saw that what could actually be very good for the coefficient is the fact that Roma and Juventus are against Madrid and Bayern.
Exactly.
You know, it's not so bad.
Yeah, but then I guess there are also other aspects.
Such as the Europa League.
Yeah, exactly.
Manchester United, first off, Dave, up against, let's mispronounce this one, Midget Land.
The mighty Midget Land.
Yes. How?
It's not that.
Yeah, obviously. Dave, how are you feeling about this one?
Quietly confident, but then this Man United team this season has thrown away a load of comfortable positions. So
set
it should
pieces,
be.
I've heard. That's where.
Yeah, they're dangerous. They're dangerous on the set piece. They've a club based on analytics, club based on data. So they do a lot of, you know, set. They've scored a hell of a lot of goals for last season. It was a massive percentage of their goals in the Danish league. They won the league last season, came from set pieces. So something United to be wary of. United have struggled from set pieces in the last two games. Two goals coming. For Bournemouth, one of them very fortuitous. And then against Wolfsburg, two again from set pieces. So if United want to progress, they've got to be smart at set pieces. They need Chris Smalling back. They need his leadership. The forwards just need to start clicking. And they could do well. I really feel this is a competition that United should go for. It's just one of those things where I like the Europa League. Everyone hates it. I like it.
Yeah, Dave,
it's a good
I mean,
competition.
Why?
Because you win it. You win a trophy at the end, right? Yeah. A European trophy.
And
I mean, it's hard. There's a lot of respect for that, though, isn't there? Because it's sort of this arduous, long competition.
Yeah. It's just one of those things that it's a.
I wouldn't mind.
It's got such history.
I'm up for the Europa League. I'm well up for it. But we've got a tough team. Tottenham have got a tough team, Dave. Give me a little bit of a scouting info on Fiorentina.
So Fiorentina, Paolo Sousa is the manager at the moment, ex-QPR. He was in Israel, won the Israeli league. Then he went to Basel in Switzerland, won the Swiss league. Fiorentina play a nice style of football. It's very attractive. I think they've got the second highest possession in Europe's top five leagues in terms of how they play. They're very Guardiola-esque, short passing, three at the back, four in midfield, three up front. You've got Nico Kranjčar, their top scorer this season, ex-Blackburn Rovers. He's been in pretty blistering form in the last 2 years. Obviously got to the final last season with Dnipro. So he knows the Europa League.
Nico Kranjčar, mate.
Yeah, Nico Kranjčar. And then you've got Borja Valero, ex-West Brom, who is a fantastic player. He's been brilliant in the Serie A for the last few seasons. He's been running the show as well. So it's going to be a tough test for Tottenham. It's going to be tough for Pochettino. And his pressing style will go. It'll make for an absolutely fantastic game, in my opinion.
Now, tough test for Tottenham.
Nico Kranjčar used to play for Tottenham and was an attacking midfielder. The guy I think you're thinking of is
Nikolo Kalinic. Sorry.
I was like, hang about.
Terrible.
He's still not playing for Fiorentina. Close. Yeah, Kalinic. Right. Kalinic is the man that we're looking out for. It. Okay. Excellent. Very interesting. Okay. I am a little bit scared of Fiorentina. I basically think we're going to get knocked out now. My hopes are not high. I think the game against Newcastle has got me a little bit worried.
Why?
Because I've sort of been saying to Dave. I was saying to Dave, people are sort of saying, Tottenham are title challenges, Tottenham are this, Tottenham are that. And I was kind of like, well, we haven't actually got a massive squad. And if one of them gets injured, you know, then we're a little bit in trouble. As soon as, you know, Moussa Dembele is missing for a few weeks against Newcastle, our midfield was so lightweight. And I'm worried that when these fixtures roll around, if we've got a few more injuries, if we don't strengthen in January, I'm a little bit worried. But
Lawrence, didn't you write a paper on Tottenham and their issues with getting to certain stages? And was it called Mentality?
I think it was a thesis.
It was called the thesis on weak mentality. I don't think it is weak mentality. Yes. I mean, I think every club's going to go. Pochettino's done a fantastic job of revitalising Tottenham. I don't know if it's revitalised. I think of vitalising Tottenham and putting a vitality in them. And, I really respect that. I do also think that that long unbeaten run that people were talking about in the Premier League had a lot of draws in. And, when a draw's not a win, but it's also not a loss.
That's Michael Owen-esque levels of but you know
what I'm saying by that? What I'm insinuating by that is that Spurs essentially had a very long run where people are going, look how fantastic it is, look at the great football. But I'm saying, how much end product was there?
Yeah.
And then when it comes to a knockout competition, you have to change up a little bit. And I wonder, when it comes to actually winning, where do Spurs get that? I mean, this here's the corner flag. Did anyone else see that the other day? Speaking of Michael Owen-esque, Redknapp-esque. Yeah. Analysis. I felt a little bit sorry for him because actually that was taken out of context. He was pointing out that it was not windy or windy where he was taking the corner from, and people took it completely out of context.
The clip that's all over Twitter where he's like, Joe Hart here is holding up four fingers. That's because he wants four people in the wall.
I think partly when you ask someone to analyse the minutiae, then you're going to have obvious statements. And I think sometimes, I mean, I understand where he's coming from on this. He's not misusing his language. It's true what he's saying. So I feel a little bit sorry for him.
I think a lot of people
assume he's going to do good, that they would do better.
A draw's not a win, Lawrence, but it's not a loss either.
But what I'm saying is that actually means something, Adam, because I had tone in my voice.
It does.
And I'm not a robot.
What about Liverpool, Lawrence? Your team, obviously.
Well, they actually just draw.
Augsburg.
Yeah. Bundesliga. Oh, they're going to know Klopp. Klopp's going to know them, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know enough about the form of Augsburg or how well they play. What I do know is that Liverpool are a club. Again, who have changed under a manager recently who's bought in a different kind of pressing and a mentality very quickly. Away from home, Liverpool have looked fantastic. We're going to see again this weekend whether Liverpool...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We'll be tested by a Watford team where Liverpool go away, but essentially Watford will end up playing like the away side. So what happens then when that happens? What's the dynamic like then? And then second to that, we're also going to see how Liverpool do with the likes of Daniel Sturridge returning in January. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that looks.
Interesting stuff. I mean,
it's all a long way off, isn't it? I mean,
yes, it's hard to analyse when it's
so far. Onto the future.
What, pulling, you know, pulling a prediction out of your
Liverpool win.
Which team is going to go furthest? English team is going to go furthest in A, the Champions League, and B, Europa League. So Champions League, are we all agreeing Manchester City probably going to go the first?
Yes.
And Europa League, are we thinking United, Tottenham or Liverpool? I'm tempted to say Manchester United for some reason.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking about maybe Liverpool more.
Maybe it is going to be Liverpool. Klopp. Yeah, right. I'm going to go Liverpool. No, I'm going to go Tottenham. Fuck it. I think... Yeah, we'll see what happens. A long way off, as you say. Things could change for February. Tottenham could be back, you know, back on another unbeaten run. We can go on another one and we'll be fine. And we'll go further than you lot. So,
that's bloody banter for you, isn't it?
Mate, that's great.
Let's put a fiver on it, mate. That's what I said.
All right.
Didn't we put a fiver on something else?
Said we'll be shit when we're shit as you.
Didn't we just put a fiver on something the other week?
Yeah, and I think I was right.
I can't remember what it was now.
It was that Chelsea would go through in the Champions League.
Oh, fuck.
And
was it? I thought I bet Man United were going out.
Tweet us, let us know.
Yeah.
Because
listen, we don't remember what happened yesterday, let alone last week.
I think I'm right, and I think you owe me a fiver, because someone tweeted me earlier in the week and said you owe Lawrence £5.
Sweet.
But, thanks, Adam.
What do they know? Before we get on to the talking
Drinks
point,
for everyone.
Before we get on to the talking point this week with Rory Jennings, the guest from the Chelsea Fans Channel, other news that's sort of been doing the rounds this week, we'll quickly try and get through. First off, Dave, talk to me about this. FC Twente have been banned from Europe. What is going on?
Yeah, so I think they've been caught breaking the third-party player ownership. And we actually had a fella that called up on the Football Republic, right, that was a FC Twente fan that was telling us that they had some players from a certain institution that does invest money into players in Europe, and FC Twente still had these players after the ruling had changed. It's pretty bad for that fan, especially, was a bit upset about it, and now it's sort of going through. FC Twente might actually go out of business if this goes wrong for them in a way. So it's one of those things where you don't really want to be in third party ownership at the moment in the world. We all know that it's a bad thing for me. It's a little bit like people trafficking. They got caught doing it, and now they've been banned. So in a way, FIFA or the Royal Netherlands Football Association have done the right thing in sort of throwing them out of the tournament. The issue that you have there is that if they have someone that's investing money into their players, who is deciding what's going on at the club? That's the big issue there. It's a conflict of interest in a way where you own some players in a club. You could sort of say what their policy is, how are they going to play in the league and so forth. It's just one of the things that we need to remove from the game. But it's good that it's sort of going the right way.
Other interesting news this week, Lawrence. Sepp Blatter has come out. I'm pretty sure he's banned, so I'm not quite sure why he's talking about football when he's suspended from all football activities.
I mean, yeah.
I believe.
Okay, sorry, I've just got two guys just shouting.
Yeah.
No, go on.
It is what it is.
He's having a full-on conference right next to me. Go on.
So he's come out and confirmed that Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid are being investigated for the same transfer irregularities.
Yeah.
Which led to Barcelona's ban. from the transfer market.
Yeah,
they're obviously banned for signing players to transfer windows after apparently breaking rules concerning the purchase of players under the age of 18.
Mm.
Now, I'm not quite sure why Blatter's confirming this news, but he said that, you know,
he's still trying to remain relevant.
Yes,
and he's trying to fight, because that's his problem as well. He's outside the sphere. He can still talk about politics, or he can talk about law, or any of these other things. I don't understand why they need to have such a loud conversation near me. It's
despite you, mainly. I think.
Genuinely one of the loudest conversations of at least over 10 feet. So he's still trying to remain relevant, talking about things he can still talk about. And obviously, he's got bigger fish to fry, in the sense that he's not allowed to fry fish right now. Basically, the news here is nothing to do with Blatter. It's to do with the fact that, you know, again, Dave was just talking about the illegal trafficking of players. It's not that serious. Whilst it's very serious, though, it's about young people being put in the wrong direction in the game, and essentially people trying to lock them down, and, you know, people being desperate, basically, to get young talent, and not doing it in the right way. And maybe some clubs being ignorant to certain ways of getting young talent. Also, some people believing they're above the law. Mm. It doesn't surprise me they're big clubs that are being investigated for this. I wouldn't be surprised if it was similar in England, although it doesn't surprise me that Barcelona and Real Madrid are both implicated.
Could be pretty bad news, considering Real Madrid like to sign a big Galactica every summer. You know, Eden Hazard or
maybe
Robert
a good
Lewandowski
time,
next summer.
Maybe a good time for them to consider their policies and whether they're actually doing the right thing. I initially enjoyed the use of the support your team hashtag, which ended up just being a really sick hashtag, but UEFA just having no idea about marketing.
Yes, that was amusing.
And whilst it started out amusing, it turned into a very perverted hashtag. But also, it, you know, it was funny in the beginning. So again, UEFA not having a fantastic week. And what we do forget is this is a huge organisation in crisis, and they are still trying to organise. Essentially, it's like, you know, having a massive divorce, but at the same time trying to organise the party to celebrate your anniversary.
I just want to finish on a little bit of transfer news very quickly. So
it's almost January, isn't it?
It is. So things are starting to gear up a little bit. A couple of small things. So last week, for Manchester United knocked out of the Champions League. Was it Wednesday they were knocked out?
Tuesday.
Lo and behold, by the end of the week, there's an article. They've obviously, Ed Woodward, perhaps. We don't know. Anonymous sources, brief newspapers. Manchester United looking to sign Neymar, Bale and Ronaldo. One of the three they're working on deals for. I mean, it's funny that came out the same week they're knocked out of the Champions League.
Doesn't mean they're looking to sign. I mean, it doesn't really mean
anything. I mean,
every
big club's interested, I'm sure.
His position, yeah.
Exactly. But what I thought was interesting in that article was basically it was positing that these deals are, you know, they're potentially could come off, but the big players don't want to play in the Premier League anymore because they want to play in the Liga, where there's a higher chance of scoring, say, 20, 30, 40 goals a season.
Wrong.
If you're an elite
wrong.
Player.
You're just wrong. Well, it's bollocks. I read
that's what I want you to say. That's what I want you to say, but I'm just coming on to that. They're essentially saying that going to La Liga gives you a better chance to win the Ballon d'Or. It's a walkover in many ways. You can score shitloads of goals, win the Ballon d'Or, and everything's peachy.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was probably the most interesting bit of the article for me, because I was like, is that true? Is that why elite players are attracted to Barcelona and Real Madrid over,
They're attracted to Barcelona and Real Madrid because they're huge institutions that for years and years have been amazing to play for and have been, you know, you can be part of a tradition, hence the conversation we just had about Pep Guardiola. Mm. But also, I think the article made some really good points that there are people who are probably attracted towards that because it means more lucrative sponsorship deals. I think it takes a lot of the money side but removes a lot of the human side, the article did in that sense. And so what I thought basically about the article was that's great, but we're basically overlooking all the human side. And maybe the human side being that, you know, some people watched England when they were growing up. All those kind of things. Or, you know, they want to play for an English team. They want to go live in London. They want to go live in Liverpool. They want to go live in Manchester. So I think there's a lot more to it than just someone saying, you know, we can get a lucrative deal. And I also think that that's not a permanent thing. You know, these things change with time. For a while, it was not the trendiest thing to play for Real Madrid. It was trendy to play for Manchester United. So, and the same in Italy, those kind of things. So it's not, it's a short-term wave. It's not a long-term fixture.
You'd like to see Neymar or Bale or Ronaldo at the club, Dave?
Nah, not see that, mate. Honestly, I want Mahrez and Jamie Vardy.
Well, that, later. That actually brings me on to final bit of news. I want to talk a little bit about Mahrez. Arsenal apparently linked with him, a January move. He said, he's come out and said he's not leaving Leicester this January, this window. As far as I know, am I right in saying he cost £500,000?
Leicester. He was a cheap one.
Mahrez.
Mahrez, yes.
Yes.
How much do you reckon he's worth
now?
I
think it might be 400. But yeah.
Dave, how much do you reckon he's worth now if Manchester United or, say, Arsenal were going to put a bid in January?
So what? Don't ask it. It's boring. Robbie Savage asked this. Put it this way. Robbie Savage said, I'd say 21.25 million pounds. Robbie Savage said this the other night. During the commentary on Five Live, he went, oh, well, you know, you want to keep them all in January. You wouldn't want to put values on them. Why are we even talking about them selling anyone in January? First question he asked on Five Live Football phone-in.
How much is he worth?
We just say Mahrez is worth. And but I was like...
I only say it because people in the office are having a debate. Some people are like, I don't even want Mahrez. Some people are saying, you know, I'd pay 20 million for him. And it seems a bit steep. But he has been, well, apart from Jamie Vardy, but arguably he has been the player of the season so far.
I'd say he's had a better season than Vardy. Yeah. Vardy has been banging the goals in, chat shit, one touch, and then get banged. But Mahrez is the heartbeat of this team. He's the one that's creating things. He's taking players on. He's really pulling the ability of Leicester City. He's taking them to the next level. I think a team with Vardy in and not Mahrez would be a hell of a lot worse than a team with Mahrez in but not Vardy. If you see where I'm coming from.
Yeah, interesting.
Still very disappointed that people seem to think that this somehow, because Nigel Pearson put this team together and Ranieri is working with a team that he took over. And also the backroom staff, some of them are still remain from the Pearson era, that somehow Nigel Pearson, therefore, is responsible for the way that they're playing their football this season.
He is, mate. If he was there, they'd be in this position right now.
There'd be even more points clear.
Yeah. That's what I'm just
saying. I'd have won the league already.
Is that people seem to think that they're trying to revive the name of Nigel.
Right. Let's move on to the in-depth talking point this week. Rory Jennings from the Chelsea Fan Channel joined us to talk all about Jose Mourinho, about the current situation at the club and what the future maybe holds at Stamford Bridge. So me and Lawrence are here with Rory Jennings from the Chelsea Fans Channel. Pleasure to have you on, Rory.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on.
Obviously here to talk about Chelsea, of course. Things not going great this season. I mean, what's been your assessment of the season so far?
Well, it's been completely abysmal. It's been the worst start to a season. No, it's not even the beginning anymore. It's been the worst season that I can remember now. I think it's definitely the worst in the Roman era. Mm. And we are, like, make no bones about it, Chelsea are now in a relegation scrap.
You actually think that?
Yes, I think that we are now. The table has taken shape. Leicester at the top, and they have a chance of winning the Premier League. And anybody south of about 14th could go down. Chelsea very much in that club.
So as you say, they're 1 point above the relegation zone at the moment. We've talked a lot in the last few weeks and months about what's been going wrong at Chelsea. But what do you think is the main factor? Because for me,
I think you're asking the wrong question there. Though I think the question should be what combination of things.
Obviously, it's not one thing.
Exactly.
But a lot of people put forward their argument and go, it's Roman, or they go, oh, it's Jose.
I'd say the main problem is Jose Mourinho. Am I wrong in saying that?
I would say that you are wrong in saying that.
I'd say he's a symptom, not a problem.
Interesting. Why are you saying I am wrong in saying that, Rory?
I think Lawrence hit the nail on the head. It's a layered problem. There isn't one answer, because if there was, I think the club would you know, find a solution. Mm. I think that the fact that it's been so long and we've been going on for such a long time now trying to get the right result and it's never happened proves how layered it is. And I think the fact that they haven't been able to come up with a solution proves that there's a real problem. I think that the multitude of layers, Mourinho is a factor, of course he is. Mm. But underperforming players is also a huge issue. Our terrible pre-season is an issue. Dr. Carneiro is an issue. It goes on and on and on.
Dr. Carneiro, is Jose Mourinho. The players, the manager's job is to... He doesn't seem to be able to motivate these players. There's a lot of talk, a classic cliche, losing the dressing room. But on that performance against Leicester was pretty bad.
But if we take that as a case study, it's very difficult for Mourinho in that situation, because he couldn't possibly predict that players who have won everything would perform to such a low level. Mm. You know, we were talking about Eden Hazard what, 12 months ago, we were talking about Eden Hazard as being a potential Ballon d'Or winner. Right, yeah. Mourinho selected him. He can't do anything more once the players have crossed the white line.
Essentially, what he has to do as part of his job is prepare the players for when they cross the white line. Mm. It doesn't seem very well like he's preparing them mentally for crossing the white line. But, that's part of it, is that there are also certain truisms about Mourinho which seem to come true every time. And that's part of the problem, is that for Chelsea, for a long time, that's been part of the identity of the club. And the modern Chelsea, the last decade that we know, the perception is all about Mourinho. And all that seems to be falling apart.
Well, yeah, of course. But Mourinho, according to, I really dislike the fact that this is all being aired in public. Mm. But Mourinho did come out and say that he prepared his players perfectly for that game. And
Or no different to the way that he won the league a few years
exactly,
ago or any of those
exactly.
things.
Exactly. Yeah. And the fact that he's come out and said, the players were in a good shape, Mourinho is known for his attention to detail. I think that he gives each player a dossier on not only the team, but the specific opponents which they'll be facing. I imagine that he would have done all of those things, a usual, normal service going into the Leicester game. Mm. And those instructions were disregarded, according to Mourinho.
So that led to the comment of betrayal.
Yes, yeah. Which was very misjudged, I think.
That's an interesting thing to say about Mourinho, because the thing is, we all think of Mourinho as a very calculating person, someone who kind of every step is well calculated, but actually that's not necessarily the case.
That's definitely a myth. It's definitely, I think that's a myth with everybody. People said it for years about Alex Ferguson, and I think that it was also a myth. I think that when they're brilliant men, they're fantastic at their job, but when they definitely have it in them to do knee-jerk reactions, say the wrong thing. And because of their previous brilliance, they say it's, people go, oh, it's mind games. Like, I remember when we had this, doctor situation, Dr. Carnera. Chelsea were going to play Manchester City. We got a very poor draw against Swansea. Swansea were unlucky not to win the game. Mm. We were playing Manchester City in a huge game earlier in the season, so early in the season. People were saying that Mourinho had purposefully orchestrated this argument with a doctor in order to shield his players from the headlines about the Swansea game and prepare them well for the City game. Couldn't have been further from the truth.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it, is that Mourinho is almost not unwilling to take the rough with the smooth. And actually, when it's smooth, then Mourinho is, the smoothest.
Yeah.
When it's rough, he's the roughest.
Exactly. I remember reading a quote from Sir Alex Ferguson about this, and he phoned up another manager and just to organise some tickets. He needed some tickets for a member of his family. It might have been John Gregory. Mm-hmm. And Gregory organised the tickets, hung up the phone and said goodbye. Gregory phoned him straight back and went, what was that really about? I know that wasn't about the tickets. I know you're up to something. And Alex was like, no, it was the tickets. I wasn't playing a mind game.
What do you make of this? The theory I've sort of seen in the last couple of weeks is that the classic free season syndrome with Mourinho, it all goes wrong in the third season.
Yeah.
And what people are essentially saying, I think it was on Monday Night Football, this was Carragher and Lampard were saying this, that essentially Jose Mourinho has never encountered this situation. He's never been in this situation with a club, and therefore he doesn't know how to rectify it.
It's a true statement. The way to rectify it is to win football games, though, and he knows how to win football games. Of course he's never been in a relegation battle before, and that is certainly what he's in now. But I do think that he is the man... He is the right man to lead us out of this. Yeah, absolutely.
This is my thing, is that, I think, Rory, I've posed this question to you before. It's a question I got on another podcast on World Soccer Talk, and the guy basically said, why don't Chelsea use this season? And Lampard himself said it the other day, saying, why don't you use this season to reset? Now, we were saying this months before any month that Chelsea... But the point is that why don't they use this season to reset? Why don't the club publicly back Mourinho? Say, well, look, we understand that certain players haven't performed to the best of their ability, and essentially hit the reset button and maintain some PR face and essentially use it as a tool for good, because at the moment it seems to be destroying a lot of the good things that Chelsea have done as far as their own plan goes.
Do you think they can reset next season though? So basically, essentially, they've almost got two options now, right? You either get rid of Mourinho or stick with him, back him until the summer, and as you say, reset. Change the squad next summer, sell, the likes of potentially...
FFP's going to make that hard though.
Exactly. So we're looking at a team that, is... as you say yourself, in a relegation battle, unlikely to qualify for the Champions League if they're not already out of the race already.
Yeah, we are out.
Unlikely to win the Champions League. We're out of the Champions League next season. Like Lawrence said, FFP makes that difficult to completely change that squad. Is getting rid of Mourinho for however many his conversation is that the only option maybe they have?
it's an option. I don't think it's the only option. I don't see why there's obvious hostility between players and the management. Mm. But they need to build some bridges. It wasn't long ago that we were looking at the relationship between Mourinho and Hazard and thinking that it was exemplary. Mm-hmm. The relationship between Mourinho, Hazard and Hazard's father was one that was pulling in completely in the right direction, really, and Hazard was setting the world alight. Mm. That needs to be repaired. Whatever the damage, you know, nobody knows exactly what went wrong. We have, there's a lot of speculation. We obviously have some pretty good ideas. But that needs to be mended. We can't simply... Of course it does.
Why not say, look, because there are other options there, which is essentially to cut and lose.
What, get 50 million for Hazard?
Yeah.
Because for the rest of the season, you need to rectify that issue and get him playing this season.
What you rightly also said, and used Ferguson as sort of an outline for a great manager, he was never afraid to cut someone out of the team. And Mourinho arguably has been the same. And in the past, that's been okay because other people have been able to step in. Mm. Maybe he misjudged how key Hazard was.
Hazard is. I think there are certain. You know, I think Ferguson has done it with the likes of Jaap Stam, who's obviously a fantastic player, but not irreplaceable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Veron, Beckham.
Yeah.
And not Cantona. He stuck with. So Cantona might be your case study.
Yes, exactly.
But Cantona's a very different player.
There's actually a similarity between, you know, the brilliance of Eric Cantona isn't dissimilar to the brilliance of Eden Hazard on his day.
Mercurial.
And exactly. And somebody like Hazard is required. He's very young. Mm. If Chelsea are going to rebuild, if we're going to find our feet again, you're relying on players like Eden Hazard being part of that, not shipping off and buying who?
Can I say then that what I'm always a little bit confused by is the immediacy that we focus on with Chelsea, and I continually find in my job that I completely change my opinion about different clubs. For a while, I really wasn't a fan of Chelsea and their approach to spending so much money, those kind of things. I almost now feel completely sorry for the fans because of the way that their clubs have been managed. And we very rarely add context to what's going on around Mourinho and the fans of the club, and almost the helplessness of the fans, because there's so much money backing Chelsea that it alienates the fans to some extent. And they're happy with the success, but at the same time, The problem for me is the shortcut to success that maybe Abramovich took has misserved the fans and the club in the long run, because they don't have anyone that represents them out on the pitch, in the sense that Loftus-Cheek isn't playing. There were other young guys coming through
You saw the distance between the players and fans.
Yeah, absolutely. The disparity between the players on the pitch and the fans in the stand is ever growing, and that's the same at all clubs. Of course, the problem at Chelsea is...
But it isn't the same at all clubs.
Spurs, mate.
There's Spurs. Liverpool feel affinity to, you know, the likes of Jordan Ibe, Flanagan's coming back, Henderson. United fielded a back four, which was all coming through their academy. Granted, foreign, but still all came through the academy.
Yeah.
There's Lingard. There's other people.
There are still players at Chelsea. Of course, the gap is growing, and it is an issue. It's something that does concern me. But there are players who do still understand the DNA and the makeup of Chelsea Football Club. Mm. Players like Loftus-Cheek are around. Players like John Terry are still around. I believe that Jose Mourinho is an example of somebody who really gets what being a Chelsea fan means. But there is a huge problem in how far removed the club have become from the fans. However, I do think that the fans have done very well and made up some of that ground recently. Mm. Remember that if Roman Abramovich had his way, Chelsea would no longer be playing at Stamford Bridge.
Sure.
The reason that we're playing at Stamford Bridge is because the fans fought for that. I'm convinced that...
Are you sure it's just a...
It's the pitch owners. I'm one of them. I am a Chelsea pitch owner. Roman Abramovich is a custodian of that, but I am the owner. And that is a hugely powerful thing. And therefore, that is why we're still playing at Stamford Bridge. Equally, I'm convinced, very interested to hear your thoughts on this, but I'm convinced that Jose Mourinho would have been sacked if Roman Abramovich didn't realise that the wrath of the fans would have been too great. The unanimous, unilateral support that the fans provided Mourinho at every single game, at the worst possible, the worst moments, away at Stoke, getting knocked out of the Carling Cup, at Stoke City on penalties. It was about midnight, and the entire away end is chanting Jose Mourinho.
And I understand that. Are we slightly seeing someone then, and there's almost an irony to this, someone who owns a club who's freezing in the headlights, essentially. Because what they do need is someone there who's going to back him. And, you know, John Henry at Liverpool came out and backed Brendan Rodgers. The Glazers, even at United, backed Ferguson, backed their man, and essentially they're backing Louis now, to some extent.
Abramovich did come out and back Mourinho in the season. The reports today are the clubs having discussions about the future. I mean, what do you make of those reports?
Today's reports I found generally laughable. At least I hope to be laughable.
Well, one minute they're meeting, the next minute they're having a Skype session or whatever it is.
Yeah, but I think that these meetings are blown up by the press. Meetings must happen on a daily basis.
It's not actually reporting a fact, but it's not reporting a fact.
Exactly that. And I think that the suggestion that one day Ramos is waiting in the wings to come into Chelsea. Roman Abramovich.
Of course he is. He can't work anywhere else at the moment.
But Roman Abramovich had his fingers burnt once with Chelsea fans. The Chelsea fans have a unilateral love for Roman Abramovich. That was tested once and only once. And that was when I never felt less in touch with my club as I did when Rafael Benitez was manager.
Sure.
And I don't think that Roman Abramovich would risk putting a Tottenham manager on.
Interesting.
But you would say there's other people out there that the Chelsea fans would be Carlo Ancelotti.
Ancelotti would be a good example of someone who the fans have nothing but love for.
Again today was mentioned.
Hiddink.
I think Hiddink is a different figure to Ancelotti. Yeah. I think Ancelotti, because there's also, to some extent, Chelsea has become a bit of a prestige club.
Yes.
And Chelsea do want that prestige. And essentially that's what I'm saying is Abramovich took a shortcut to prestige at times. And it's misserved the fans.
Would you say a shortcut? We spent a lot of money, but that was our only way of doing it. You know, it's important to remember that Chelsea were in the Champions League when Roman Abramovich bought us. You know, we were knocking on the door.
But arguably, you have the same level of Liverpool, those other guys.
Yes.
Maybe even just below Liverpool because of what Liverpool.
Yeah. Although interestingly, it was Liverpool who we knocked out of. We had a playoff. Yeah. So it was Liverpool we played on the final day of the season when Jesper Gronkjær scored.
Yeah.
But yeah, of course, you know, I would never dream of suggesting that. Chelsea's status, even now, even you know, under Roman Abramovich, we've had some fantastic years, and Liverpool, it hasn't been so great. No Chelsea fan in their right mind would even begin to suggest that Chelsea are even near to Liverpool's stature.
Not historic stature, no, but you definitely say that in terms of the club now, marketability-wise, is...
Yes, I suppose, looking at it from that angle.
Depending on what you market. But
let me bring it around, background then, to finish it off. So we're talking about how, you know, you're saying you back Jose Mourinho. You think he's the right man at the moment?
Completely.
Would you not back Carlo if he came in?
I would back anyone in a Chelsea shirt, with notable exceptions. Rafael Benitez.
He didn't really wear it. He wore a red tie to the first time.
I would back, but would I back a new manager, somebody like Ancelotti? Absolutely. That isn't the same as would I happily welcome Ancelotti? Would I be happy to see the back of
Mourinho?
What
I want to know is how bad does it have to get before Mourinho, you're against Mourinho, because you're saying that Abramovich won't sack Mourinho because it's against the will of the fans. When does that point come with the fans?
So are you asking our next two fixtures now are two 6-pointers against Sunderland and Watford?
Relegation.
Are you asking if we were to lose those two home games?
When does the final straw come? Sunderland and Watford next to home. You've got Manchester United away on the 28th. Is it after this Christmas period if things...
If you are, I will... Answering this question for me, if we were to lose those two games and then lose at Old Trafford, I would still say that Mourinho is the right man.
I think you've got to go out of the Champions League for them to lose.
We are going to go out of the Champions League, I think.
We've got such a tough...
Yeah, of course. I still think that Mourinho is the right man. Give him to the end of the season no matter what. Even if that means going out of every cup competition and finishing 16th, give him the time. Whether my feelings there, my sentiment, will be reflective of the support if we were to lose those games, perhaps.
What do you think the support is?
The support is it's so passionately in favour of Mourinho.
Why?
Because we love him, and he won the league. He won the league 6 months ago.
But what do you love about Mourinho?
If anybody has earned the right to put this problem right, if anybody deserves a bit of faith from us, if anybody should have a bit of grace and a bit more time. He is the man. He's earned that for us. He guided us to our first Premier League in 50 years.
Do you think there's a little bit of exceptionalism for this guy? Because if this was any other manager in the Premier League...
Oh, 100%. If this was any other manager, he'd be gone. So if it was any other manager, I'd want him gone.
You're saying he's a special one?
I'm saying he's a special one. It's a special case. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Thanks very much for coming on, Rory.
Oh, it's a real pleasure.
Fantastic.
Go subscribe to Chelsea Fan Channel on YouTube. Yes. Well worth a subscribe. Even if, the thing is,
Rory every day.
But the thing is, also most people don't go and subscribe if they're not a Chelsea fan. So I'd imagine you have a lot of Chelsea fans that watch.
Generally, yes.
But if you aren't a Chelsea fan, go and subscribe because you always learn something about Chelsea, your nemesis, and you can use that against them.
And also, you get to see a lot of unhappy Chelsea fans at the moment, which you should enjoy.
Yeah. And those are rare. So go over there, hit subscribe. It's really good.
Perfect.
Thanks, man.
That was fun.
Very interesting stuff there from Rory really Lawrence. Good chat, I think we had.
Rory's just a nice guy.
Wonderful guy. Really nice guy. And he's a very passionate Chelsea fan. I'm surprised that he essentially sticks by Mourinho, and it seems like he's going to stick with him no matter what. He was sort of saying, you know, if over the Christmas period they lose every game, he'll still be behind Mourinho. I'm surprised by that because, Dave, I mean, Mourinho has showed no signs of being able to turn this around. What's going to change?
Well, that's what I sort of alluded to before in the previous podcast, is they're going to have to sell a load of players and bring a load of new players in. Today we saw James Rodriguez being linked with a swap deal with Eden Hazard.
Mm.
You know, it's media, rubbish, but it's quite interesting, a concept of taking a big player out, Eden Hazard, and swapping him with somebody else.
Well, we put this to Rory. I was sort of saying, you know, they have two options here, Chelsea. They can either get rid of the manager or they can revamp the squad, which basically doesn't want to play for the manager. But revamping that squad can be very difficult when, you know, financial fair play, they're not going to qualify for the Champions League this season. It looks like all that money lost, they're not going to be able to revitalise the squad unless they do sell the likes of Eden Hazard potentially. But his value has probably gone down significantly, I'd argue, this season. So surely it's cheaper and more feasible to get rid of Mourinho, pay him that compensation for 30 million, than, right, we've got to completely revitalise this squad. Diego Costa's got to go, Fabregas has got to go, Hazard's got to go. It doesn't seem like a feasible option.
It's one of the two options. The interesting thing is, if you think about Mourinho, right, yeah, he does very, very well in the first 2 years. But is this his business plan? Does he do so well in the first 2 years that then, you know, he'll change something in that third year and he'll get sacked and he'll get a massive payout? He's going to be turning over a lot of books. Is this a conspiracy that Lawrence is going to come and absolutely annihilate in a minute?
Genius.
No, there's longevity in some of what Mourinho does. I think the incredible thing that we did see was in the 10 years since, you know, they've started the Chelsea project, we saw the incredible loyalty that the players showed to Mourinho in that time. And, you know, so many journalists joked about that on the inside, that they missed his training, they missed his in-depth analysis, they missed all these things. They were almost, Jonathan Wilson the other day, I was watching a video back in 2012, I think it was, and he was sort of joking that the players were like, no, Jose wouldn't do that. Jose didn't do it. No, Carlo, you don't know. Jose wouldn't do it this way. And the players were fiercely loyal to him. So it's not like he can't build up squads without that longevity. But it's something, it's almost the superfluous factors that trip him up in the end. It's almost pride before a fall with Mourinho at times. And, you know, in this same interview, which is on the Football Ramble, Jonathan Wilson says he's almost like Cleopatra, and he has this lover's tryst with people and with clubs and leaves them scarred. And to some extent, I buy into that.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Mourinho, whether he's in a job past Christmas. But that does bring an end. Past this podcast, potentially, yeah. That does bring an end to this week's podcast, though. Thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed.
Do you want to do the comment of the week? Did we not do comment of the week?
I think I want to save comment of the week for the Q&A podcast on Saturday, because the comment of the week is going to be whoever compiled that best £500 million team. We haven't forgotten about that. We did ask, and there was some great suggestions flying in. A little bit disappointed with our squad in hindsight. I feel like we could have done better.
I feel like your criticism of Emre Can was not warranted.
Yeah, I think it was.
I feel like you're really unreasonable.
So the comment of the week will be coming up on Saturday anyway. Be sure to tune in on Saturday. That's when we will be doing that Q&A podcast. Until then, guys, if the whole wants to go and follow you on Twitter, SQUAWKA Dave. That's it, isn't it, Dave?
That's exactly right, Adam. What about you, mate? How do we find Adam Boltwood?
Oh, Adam Boltwood on Twitter, mate. You just type that in and you'll see my, I think the latest thing I tweeted was very upset after the Newcastle Tottenham game. It was a little bit hard to take. But Lawrence, what about you?
If you want that miserable stuff.
Yeah, it was very Spursy. It was very Spursy, wasn't it?
LOZCAST. See you there.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for listening to this week's Front 3, and we'll see you on Saturday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Maron to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Maron at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.